You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 1. Leaving work in a mood? Time to change that with Overdrive.
Listen closely. Do you hear that? That's the voice of a f***ing Hall of Famer. That's right, you pigeons. Jerry's gonna be enshrined in the hall forever and ever.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
We are live from the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we're all dolled up. We're in suits.
Yes, we are.
We're chatting. We're networking. We feel very professional. And there's It's the who's who of the hockey world and the hockey media. They're all down here, and they've been down here for a while. And we'll paint a picture for you. Noodles, you were here first.
Yes.
And then I showed up, and then O showed up. But all relatively around the same time.
Yeah, we got here early. Like, we were here early.
For our show, for sure. For our show. And Gino's here, and we're talking to Gino and Pierre LeBrun. And there's a lot of big shooters from the NHL Network and NHL Radio's here with our buddy Steve Coolius and Matthew Barnaby. And we're sitting here, and we've set up shop, and we're talking with a number of people who we hold in high esteem.
Exactly.
And we'd like to believe they look upon us as professional
as colleagues,
broadcasters.
They respect us, I believe.
And as we're talking with a group of people, a young gentleman rolls through the middle of the Hall of Fame with a duffel bag from McDonald's. He's a friend of the show, a fan of the show. He drops it off and goes, I thought you guys would be hungry. I wanted to bring this to you for your show at the Hall of Fame this afternoon.
That's a Hall of Fame move.
Francis Sundin, Kevin Dineen, Nelson Emerson, and the guy that brought the McDonald's is next in line.
Those are your favorite teammates of all time? Is that what
like
you're saying?
Just as far as respect.
Right, exactly.
For another individual, Francis Sundin, Kevin Dineen, Nelson Emerson, guy that brought the McDonald's.
He's an absolute
legend. Did he at least get
legend.
A name?
I believe his name was Jeff.
So Jeff is a friend of the show. This is unreal. I'm pretty fired up. We got a dance party going on.
Yeah, it's
going
to be so loud down here.
It's
going to be so loud.
It's just the Steve Coolia show. It's just going to be yelling and screaming.
It's going to be so loud.
It doesn't matter, though. You know why? Because everyone is going to be jealous of our table. We're going to have some hardcore hockey talk. And we got nuggets and fries.
It is really actually getting embarrassing because the whole place now smells like McDonald's.
I don't care. And I will. I think when someone drops off McDonald's, I'm going to eat nugs anytime, at any time. I don't care.
You wear it like a badge of honor.
You've got the nuggets set up. You have the barbecue sauce, which was very important. And it seems like you're very, very comfortable at this point.
I am very comfortable. I love the nugs, and I think it should be a staple on the show.
I agree with you. Anyway, it's good to be down here. We missed out on last year's induction because I blew my knee out.
That's right. You were Lieutenant Dan. We couldn't get you down here.
I was thinking about it today on the way in. I can't believe I walked around with that goofy knee brace for like a month and a half.
I can't even remember. Were you knee braced on the outside of your pants?
Outside of the pants, from the waist to the ankles.
See, when you're in it, you sometimes forget. But I guarantee you there are people that were on the outside of the show that saw you and said, what a loser.
Oh, I'll guarantee you people were taking pictures without my knowledge, which is a gutless thing to do.
From, like, you're walking down the hallway at TSN.
Don't ever take pictures of people if they're not prepared for it.
Exactly.
And I guarantee you there's a lot of them out there of me in a full-blown leg brace from a year ago. But it's good to be back at the Hockey Hall of Fame, and we're going to have people join us around the table throughout the afternoon. The Leafs are on their way out to California. I believe they're in the air as we speak, if they're not there already.
I'm surprised that I was thinking about this morning selfishly, being a media member here in, out east. I'm surprised that teams didn't play at 4 o'clock out there on the East Coast, or sorry, on the West Coast, just so we could watch it at 7 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Here.
How dare they wait up until 10:30 tomorrow night?
That's all I could think about when I saw the start times. I'm like, are they going to do this? Now, they would do it if it was in Canada. You know, Vancouver's had to do that on Saturday nights, and Calgary and Edmonton and stuff. But all I could think about is, wouldn't that be gutless where
even Winnipeg, I think Winnipeg dials it back an hour.
They do.
But, like, if this was San Jose Leafs at 4:30 p.m. local time, just so we can be on our couches right after the show.
Especially midweek.
Oh, yeah, like a Wednesday.
Because, really, these are the only three games
Ryan,
all year where you have to stay up.
You know better than anybody. It doesn't matter what time the game is. People are going. Look at the Cubs. Like, who the hell's, like, you would think, who could go to a lot, but they're failed every game.
Yeah.
1 o'clock on a Wednesday against the Brewers.
And people would show up. They didn't have lights at Wrigley Stadium until, I want to say, the 90s?
Yeah.
Like, they played exclusively day games for, like, 100 years at Wrigley. Never played at night. Would not play. If they were going, like, into the 15th, 16th inning, they're like, well, we're going to have to postpone the game. We'll come back tomorrow and play.
It's crazy.
The sun's gone down. They refuse to accept electricity and technology and lights. You're right. I mean, people would show up. They'd find a way to get off work, and they'd go down to the games. But that, unfortunately for us, is not going to be the case.
It didn't happen, but I just, in the back of my mind, I kept thinking to myself, you know, we always talk about the Leaf effect throughout the league and all of that. That would have been one that would be kind of the trump card. Like, I know it happens in Canada, but, like, in the U.S., people in San Jose going, like, really? We gotta conform to the East because of this?
We got to fight traffic to get to Staples Center at 4:30
so
that Hayes and company don't lose a gasket back in Toronto.
Exactly.
But it was an interesting weekend for the Leafs because on Friday night, the Hall of Fame game, you were down there, and I heard you on the panel afterwards. It felt like there was a lot of energy in the building, and they played really well.
Yeah.
And Jersey didn't even show up, but that's not the Maple Leafs' problem. And then Saturday was the game. I mean, that was the game everyone was focused on. And I said all throughout the week last week that there is an analogy to be used here when it comes to the Bruins and the Leafs and the Cavaliers and the Raptors the previous few years.
I think Pedro Martinez summed it up best. Remember what he said? The Yankees are my daddy. Do you remember that?
Yeah. But, I mean...
You remember? He was like, I don't know. I can't do it.
He couldn't get by him.
I'm going to say this, though. I still think that was... It was a November game that means nothing.
But here's what I'm saying, okay?
Okay.
LeBron represented one full line in the NHL, if you're using the comparison.
Technically, yep.
Pasternak, Bergeron, Marchand
are
to the Leafs what LeBron has been to the Raptors.
Yeah.
That line is their kryptonite. Now, you're right, it's only November, but last April they also did it to them.
No, I get
that. And there's something about that line and the Leafs, and they just simply cannot stop them.
No.
They cannot stop them. And, yes, it would have been different if Freddie Anderson was playing.
Correct.
Yes, it would be different if Austin Matthews was playing, but that line still would have showed up.
No,
that line, I guarantee you there's certain lines versus certain teams, Brian, where if the coach brought him in and said, do you want me to avoid something? Like, do you want to get away from Chara, or do you want to get away from Scott Stevens? Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak would go into the coach's office and say, give us any, whatever.
But that's what Cassidy does. He doesn't care who they play against.
No, because they kill everyone.
They kill everybody.
And he trusts them, though. Like, that's the one thing, even Mitch Marner's quote afterwards, and that speaks to the amount of respect that line has around the league. It's... Yeah, Pasternak is a goal scorer clearly and a superstar, but I still don't think enough is made of how great of a player Patrice Bergeron is. And having Mitch Marner and some players say, like, man, this guy is legitimate, like, superstar because of everything he does.
He'll be walking down this carpet soon.
Yeah, he will.
Exactly.
He will be.
He's the most undervalued lock Hall of Famer maybe of my lifetime. Like, I can't think of another comparison in any other sport where the guy, he's 33. He's going to play for at least another 5 years. He's never won a Hart. I don't believe he's ever been nominated for a Hart.
No.
But he's a lock, first ballot Hall of Famer.
But you're right. But that's, now, I hate drawing parallels, but, like, Datsyuk was that type of player. I don't remember how many times people would say to me, and I'm talking like Ginla, Strudwick, the guys that in my core of group that I played with in the National Hockey League, Fedorov, we get it, Gretzky, Lemieux and that, but like Datsyuk is ridiculous. And it was always this mantra around Datsyuk where he'd get, you know, he'd be up there, but there was always somebody else like that got the flash and dash or the attention. I still believe Bergeron is in that ilk. Now, they're not the same player, but just as far as respect, it's that type of, like, respect from internal, mm-hmm. not from the outside, internal. Players going, that's the guy that I hate playing against.
Yeah. Think of the selkies those two players cost each other.
Yeah.
Datsyuk and Zetterberg, or Datsyuk and
Bergeron. Yeah.
It's like the other guy didn't win it. It was going to be the other one. Yeah. They cost themselves probably three or four at least.
Yeah. And he is the engine of that line. As great as Pasternak is and Marchand, it's Bergeron that makes it run. And that line, again, is LeBron James.
Yep.
It is LeBron James to the Raptors. That line is to the Maple Leafs. And the Leafs have until April, if they meet in the first round or second round or whatever, to try to figure it out. So you don't have to figure it out tonight.
No.
And they had a great first period. I think what happened on Saturday was because they didn't score first, when Bergeron tipped that first one in, they said, that's it. Yeah. We gave everything we could. We were flying early. Yeah. We're playing a back-to-back. We've got our backup in. And it went south quickly after that.
I did not like the goaltender comment after the game.
Well, let me read this quote.
Yeah, let's...
This is Garrett Sparks, who is trying to find his way into the league. And I respect and appreciate his honesty about how he's still trying to learn what it means to be a backup.
Hey, I get it, too. But I don't need you saying that's the hardest shot I've ever seen in my life.
This is different. Yeah, being honest about the schedule and all that and
you're
how
in the
you're
NHL.
Adapting, I understand that. Sparks was asked about Pasternak's one-timer, his first goal, the second goal of the game, I believe it was. And he said, quote, that's the hardest shot I've ever seen. Knocked himself silly one-timing it, end quote.
I don't understand that part. Knocked who silly? Like Pasternak knocks himself silly one-timing that?
I don't know what that is supposed to mean either. I just don't like that. I don't like pumping the tires of the opposition after the guy got you for three. He got you for three, and yes, it was a bomb. Now, Sparks didn't even move. It hit the middle of the net, but it was a bomb, and it got off his stick quickly.
Yes.
And Pasternak's a great player. We know that. Yeah. I just don't need – this is the new-aged, new-era type of back and forth where everyone's respectful and everyone's happy and everyone loves each other. The guy just got you for three. It's probably your biggest rival right now is the Boston Bruins. That line – again, as we've been saying, has crushed this team, and you got the backup goalie saying, oh, that's the hardest shot I've ever seen. Why are you saying that?
Why can't you just say, you know what, for me, I got to be better, and we got to play better against this team because there's a good chance of, and who the hell knows? I know it's emotional after the game. You don't really know what to say, but we might face these guys in the spring, and I got to be better. I don't need to hear you saying that that's the hardest shot you've ever seen. I go Tiger Woods on that, where he never complimented anybody ever.
No, and you can speak to it as a backup.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Listen, the backup's going to speak after he starts, but I would think it would be a pretty natural thought process. That
short and sweet.
I'm going to keep it short and sweet. I'm not going to give any material for anybody to focus on me.
Yeah.
But that's not his general.
And it's not his personality, which is fine, but I think there are things that are a learning curve for Garrett Sparks, and that's one of them. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody pulled him aside and said, hey, you know what? I love the fact that you're honest, but you might want to just dial it back a little bit at that point. Maybe the next day, you know, after the game has breathed a little bit. Then you're like, holy smokes, you know what? I was looking at the tape again. Man, I didn't even react on that one because it was such a bang-bang play. You can give love out, but I always think of the word timing, and I don't know if that was the time. If that's people's biggest issue with Sparks, I think there's, you know, there's other things. I still think he still has to earn the confidence of the group. You know, he's 2-1. That's ultimately, that's all you can ask for is wins over losses. But at some point, you have to be the guy. Now, the one win, L.A. L.A.'s last place in the league. They're struggling. But doesn't matter who your competition is. You've got to give your team a chance to win the other night. Garrett Sparks wasn't the problem, but he wasn't the solution either.
Right, and I would think he'll get in later in the week
when
they've got another back-to-back with San Jose and L.A., I believe it is. As for the William Nylander news, I mean, it just continues, and over the weekend it came out that the Leafs are fielding calls and basically asking teams, what are you willing to give up? What are you willing to talk about? What are you not willing to talk about?
But you have to do that if you're Kyle Dubas.
You have to
do it. Start looking at options because – you know, what do you, you're not just going to let the deadline, you're not going to get to November 30th and go, okay, now we're going to look at options.
The crazy thing about it is I don't like it because oh, you're going to have to call the other team to say, yeah, you want me, but I want $8 million. And they're going to be like, well, we don't want to give you that either.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a unique house where you build a log home. Not everybody's into that.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So it's like, you want $8 million? We don't think you're worth that either, so we're not in that market for you at $8
million. Yeah. And
so
I,
it's like he's jamming everything up here. And
unless, here's a thought maybe outside the box. Let's just say Organization X, because I'm not going to try and link him to anywhere. Organization X believes they've got a package to get him. And there is some communication with the agent saying, okay, yeah, we'll put a package together for him. If we trade for him, what would the extension look, what would the contract look like? And if they're saying 8.25, well, we're not in that neighborhood, but here's what we can promise. You know, an eight-year deal at something with a seven in it, but he's going to play what he believes is his natural position, center ice. You know, this is an opportunity for him to play, you know,
a bigger role and be the star of the team or close to it.
Something, it has to be situational. That's the only thing that I can think of which would make sense for him to soften his stance.
That's fine, but that's the Nylander stance. That doesn't include the Maple Leaf stance.
No, not at all.
That doesn't mean the package that this team has come up with is going to cut it. And I think what we've learned over the past two or three years when it comes to players that are on their way out and you know what's coming, more often than not, the offers are underwhelming.
Yeah.
And
you're right.
Think you have to be bracing yourself for that if you're a Leaf fan right now. Furthermore, what I have come to the conclusion of, and it was always a fantasy that all these guys were going to spend 20 years in Toronto.
Right.
William Nylander, there is no chance this guy's retiring a Leaf. There's no chance this guy's going to be here long term. I don't think it's going to happen just based on history. When you look at the other guys who have been waiting for contracts for a long time,
right.
Like Subban, like Ryan O'Reilly, there's a long list of guys, mm-hmm. Kyle Turris, guys who are like, I'm not signing until I get what I want. Eventually, there was some sort of an agreement. Eventually, that player was shipped out. I think that's what happens here with William Nylander. I'm not saying it's going to be this year or even next year or even the year after that, but I don't see William Nylander here in 5 years.
I just don't
see it, because I think this sours the organization. It sours the relationship, and the Leafs aren't going to say that publicly, but I think it's a reality. And the truth is, I can't picture a long-term deal at this point.
I don't care if he's not here in the next 5 years. You look at all these teams that are locked into contracts long-term.
But that's what they want, though. They envisioned him signing an eight-year deal.
I don't care about it, because if things don't work, why do you want a guy for 8 years?
But what if it does work? What if it does? What if they win a cup next year? You'd probably want them to stick around.
Yeah, you know what? Chicago won 3 cups. Do you think they still want Brent Seabrook and Duncan Keith on their team right now?
Probably not.
So you know what? It might work once, but that doesn't mean it's going to work 8 years down the road. So I could give a rat's ass if he's here for 8 years.
Well, I hear
you. Play here for a couple, and I don't care. Try to win a cup. But after that, go somewhere else.
But that's probably what's going to happen, right?
Yeah. All this idea of keeping everyone around for 10 years, it doesn't work.
But it's idealistic. It can work with the kids. You know, like it's McDavid and Draisaitl are staying at Edmonton for a long time.
If somewhere down the line you need to move them, you can move them. That's the only way it works.
But not if we're talking about elite talent. Sid and Malkin are there forever in Pittsburgh, right? Like there are guys who, elite talent, you can keep.
That's where you're making a great point. Elite talent. William Nylander is not elite talent. He's part of a core, and he's a good player.
Yeah, that's why I don't care if he's here for 5+ years at all.
Let me ask you a question then. Do you see Nikolai Ehlers being a lifetime gem?
No, I don't.
No,
but he still signed the deal, though, Noodles.
You're right.
But that's the difference.
You're right. But what I'm saying is,
he seems to be the kind of guy to me, Jamie, where it's like, we might want to get a different direction in either that position or trade him for a D or whatever. He's the kind of guy that will move out.
But he's on cost certainty, and that's Brian's point. Is he going to have a term deal where you go, okay, we can move player X because he's got 3 years left at 6.5, so the team acquiring him knows exactly what they're getting.
Yeah.
Right now, the spicy meatball is if you are going to trade for William Nylander, all you're doing is taking Toronto's quote-unquote, and I'm saying this respectfully, problem in essence, because he still wants the same amount of money.
Yes.
It's just with your organization, so you're going to potentially try and pay a king's ransom for a guy that you have to now pay a lot of money.
And the Leafs have valued him where they believe is a fair value. Now, there will be other teams that value him higher.
Sure.
But not substantially higher. Not $3 million a year higher. Like, they're all – this is a league
the
where they don't sign offer sheets. the GMs all kind of think along the same lines.
Yeah.
Like, I guarantee you there's a lot of GMs in the league that know what Dubas is offering, and they're like, that's what I'd offer him. I'm not offering him more than that.
You
that's exactly
it.
What he deserves. But let's say he gets a 2 or 3 year deal done.
Yeah.
If he's been asking for 8, he's not going to get that over 3 years. But if he's been asking for 8 today, in 3 years he's going to ask for 10. And you can't give that to him.
But
you're not going to be able to. The Leafs will not be in a position to give him that.
Here's what I would know 3 years down the road if he's a $10 million player. Because I'll tell you right now, today he's not an $8 million player. 60 points doesn't get you $8 million.
Nope.
So if he goes and 3 years from now is a 90-point player and is a 35-goal scorer and has the points, you get paid for what you're worth. But right now, I don't see what the Toronto Maple Leafs, from a management standpoint, have done wrong here. They valued a player who, on paper, has done exactly what they are willing to pay for, and that is the wheelhouse of Ehlers, and go right down the line.
The high-end pass.
The higher-end pass, you know, like that type of stuff. So
if I could take a guess and just throw something in the sky, I think the dad is one of the major factors in the negotiations. I think if there were, the dad wasn't an NHL player and you just had a Joe Blow dad that was a carpenter, it would be like 6.5 over 6 years. Are you nuts?
Yeah.
Like, are you nuts?
To play in a place where we presume he enjoys playing for a very good team, and then you can cash in again at 28.
Yeah, I really think if you took the dad out of the situation, the kid's got a jersey on and playing hockey right now. That is my own personal
opinion.
I think that's a factor.
I still personally think it'll get done.
Well, I think you're probably right, but there's no guarantees.
Well, I don't even use the term getting it done anymore. The guy's pissed away 3 months of the season.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of this situation right now is a lot of times it looks at it most bleak, and then all of a sudden it happens.
It's dire right now. And the truth is, if he signs tomorrow, they survived without him. They're 11-6 without him.
Right. So like it can look at like it's on life support, and all of a sudden it happens, and then you move on. Like, and I still believe that relationship can be repaired because this is business.
The Jimmy Butler relationship with the Timberwolves could not be repaired, and now he's in the East, and the Raptors are on fire, but Philly's got a big three to be reckoned with. We're going to head down to Philly, catch up with longtime NBAer Mark Jackson. He's a Sixers analyst. Get his take on how this kind of shifting the powers in the East maybe plays out. We're live at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. We are live at the Hockey Hall of Fame. Ray Ferraro will join us in about a half an hour. Joe Bowen is going into the hall this evening, I guess over the weekend. He's going to be joining us around the table here at 5:30.
I went to the Joe Bowen Hall of Fame lunch today.
How was that?
It was fantastic. I was very happy. Brought a tear to my eye here.
Really? In
Bonesy's speech. Kids were there. Thanked his family. He got a little choked up himself.
He's a passionate gentleman.
I was happy I was there.
Definitely a Hall of Famer.
Now, we'll get into it with Bones, but is there a particular call that sticks out for you? Like, I don't have the rich history with Joe.
Well, I think he would tell us that the Borshevsky overtime winner, Game 7 in Detroit, probably his most famous call. Probably.
Most recent one is Matthews. Is it not the four-goal night?
Yes. I think when Connor Brown scored against Pittsburgh to seal the playoff a couple of years ago, that was a big one. And he said the little Irishman has found a pot of gold or whatever it was. Wee Willie Nylander. I wonder if that's a part of the negotiation, that Bowen never calls him Wee Willie Nylander again. But he's had a lot of them over the years. I mean, he's been the voice of the Leafs for almost 40 years now. So we'll get him to explain all that for us in about an hour. Joe Bowen will join us live from the Hall of Fame. It's a big week. Wednesday night, Dwayne Casey is back in town. And we have put in a request. I don't know if he's going to be able to come on the show because I would assume there are a lot of people that have been requesting an interview with him.
For sure.
But I would hope. He remembers we were...
We backed
we were pretty
him up.
Good,
well,
pretty good to him.
I mean, you...
He shall not forget Hazy B.
He calls him B. Although he probably is tired, was happy that he's not being asked for tracksuits anymore.
Yeah. I wouldn't shock me if someone stole that bit down in Detroit.
That's true.
A corny radio show down in Detroit that started asking him for free gear all the time or whatever. But Dwayne Casey returns to Toronto on Wednesday with the Pistons in town. And tomorrow you will have a chance to win a pair of tickets to the game. when you hear this clip from Coach Casey.
Hey, B, how you doing, buddy?
You have to be the eighth caller through at 416-870-1050, and you will win. So when you hear, hey, B, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, B, how you doing, buddy?
The phone lines will be open, and the eighth caller in will go to check out the Pistons in town Wednesday night to take on the Raptors. The Raps are in action tonight with New Orleans in town. And this is a big test because the brow is rolling like he always does, and this is not a matchup that Kawhi is going to be able to shut down. He's not going to be on Anthony Davis tonight. So Serge Ibaka has been maybe the story of the NBA. Let's see what you got tonight with Anthony Davis. And Pascal Siakam just won Eastern Conference Player
of the
Week.
Man, yeah. That's cool.
And he's going to be D'ing up against Anthony Davis tonight. So this will be a battle of the front court for sure. But the East, it took on a different feel over the weekend when Jimmy Butler got traded to Philly. And I thought the
Isn't
display.
It amazing, though, like a guy pulls those stunts in Minnesota and then another team says, I got to get that guy. Imagine that, pulling that. I couldn't touch it.
I agree with you. I honestly thought it was one of the more pathetic displays in recent
history. Of handling a situation instead of going behind the scenes. And maybe sometimes going behind the scenes doesn't work, but to handle it like that, I thought was flat-out garbage. Losing it on everybody, Rachel Nichols suddenly in the building at the same time, and then you get your wish and you get moved. I would want him gone so fast.
Yeah, I think Minnesota, obviously they realized he had to go. It took them way too long. They screwed up this situation as well. He should have been gone before the season even started, or they should have just come up with some mutual agreement where he's not even in the gym.
Yeah,
like he's not around the team.
You suspend him until you can move him.
You're out of here. We'll keep paying you, but you're not playing. Now, maybe the PA gets involved, and maybe you can't do that. But I thought his antics were absolutely
despicable,
ridiculous in many. And I'm not convinced it's going to work in Philly. I'm not, because you think Markelle Fultz wants to deal with this guy?
But here's the thing. He may go into a new situation, and they may lay the law down with him immediately and go, none of that nonsense here.
Just before we get to our next guest, I watched NBA TV. It was just a random restaurant, and they were floating around games. I saw Markelle Fultz shoot a free throw.
Mm-hmm.
It was the weirdest thing. Have you ever seen?
It's a mess. It's still a mess.
That's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
The first overall pick. It's
I
a mess.
I know.
All right, let's head down to Philly. Longtime NBA center, NBC Sports Philly NBA analyst. Here's Mark Jackson. What's happening, Mark?
What's going on, fellas? How are you?
We're doing okay. Let's begin there. What's up with Markelle Fultz? When's this guy going to figure it out with that shot?
I'm going to be honest. I don't know. I don't know because I'm just being honest, right? Because last year, okay, it was really messed up. He still had significant pain. He's supposed to be pain-free as of this summer and that preseason. But I'll tell you what I've observed. I really think during this season, the first, 11, 12 games they had, I really think on the foul shot, I believe his hitch has gotten worse. During this season, I thought preseason he had as much as a hitch. But I think with every game, I see the hitch coming back more and more. I don't know what's going on with it, but I'm starting to be concerned again.
Yeah, I would think so.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, I've seen dudes in street clothes in a gym with better flow than that shooting a ball.
It's Philip Seymour Hoffman jacking up threes. It's
Shaq.
Yeah, it's ugly, man. And now Jimmy Butler comes in, who's a very soft-spoken, thoughtful guy and would always take into consideration the feelings of his teammates. I'm sure Butler won't have anything to say about it. I personally, Mark, did not like his antics in Mini. I understand players and teams, they want to go separate ways. Things happen. But I didn't like the antics when the games were actually on. And I'm not convinced this is going to work in Philly. But how do you feel about Butler going to the Sixers?
I think far as player personnel, I think it's a great, great move. And I think it'll work as far as on the court and the dynamic they have with the trio, with the pieces around them. I'm not really worried about Jimmy Butler ethics. Respectfully, when he was with Chicago, when he started to decline of this thing with Memphis, the guy just wanted to get paid. And I've been on some teams, primarily my rookie year at Golden State, when they weren't the Golden State of now, we were losing. And the locker room was similar. The locker room wasn't a good place to be. And it's a good place for young guys to learn what not to do. And so I was there. So I know losing could do that to some guys. And I really believe that's how he felt. I was really, he's tired of losing. He kind of lashed out in a horrible way. And I think it hurts his how people see him. They don't just view him basketball wise now. They view him for the comments, for the spectacle that he caused in Minnesota. And before that, little spectacle he had in Chicago, him and Dwayne Wade and Rondo going back and forth about how he treated rookies. But I think, far as basketball wise, I think it's a great fit. I'm not worried about that. As far as some comments during his antics, I think Joel Embiid will crush that faster in a hurry. The 76ers have two of the youngest superstar players in the entire NBA, but they're also two of the most mature as far as going about their business. And I know for a fact they're not worried at all about Jimmy Butler kind of come here and start all that, because also it's the culture. The culture of a locker room can dictate behavior with players as also as front office executives.
I agree. I think that, you know, a change of scenery can help everyone. Just going back to when you played, so give you an example. If you, you know, if you're looking at having a dressing room with a guy like that involved, you know, I know times have changed, but don't you think if a player attacks a dressing room verbally and calls out some of the guys, maybe it's a closed door situation where guys maybe get in his face, and you know, you hear everything out of Minnesota where it didn't happen and there wasn't a lot of pushback. I don't think he'll act like that in Philadelphia, but how would you have handled that being a player in that dressing room?
That's a great question. I often wondered, where were the veterans in Minnesota? I know Jimmy's a veteran, but when he lashed out, when he was doing some things he did, where were the other veterans in that locker room to step up for those young guys? Those young guys are young. They look up to Jimmy. And for Jimmy to kind of lash out and go do what he did, I think it was a bad look. But I don't blame Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns, who everybody's saying, oh, you should have approached him. You should have said something. No, you shouldn't. And you're a young guy. You're still trying to earn your way, even though you're making lots of good money. But Jimmy is was supposed to be the veteran in the locker room. That's not your job. That's another veteran's job.
Yeah.
So if that was me in the locker room, personally, one of those veterans would have stepped up and said, hey, Jimmy, we feel you. You know, calm all that down. We're here to win some games. We know you want to get paid, but don't take that on a player that had nothing to do with it. You know, so that could have been something.
Yeah.
With longtime NBA or current 76ers analyst Mark Jackson here on Overdrive. All right, let's take a look at how this changes the, you know, kind of pyramid in the East, where the Raptors are off to a 12-1 start. I mean, they have been spectacular. They're crushing teams. I mean, people up here are real, real confident. And Kawhi's not even playing back-to-backs yet. And once he really gets into a rhythm, I feel good about the Raptors. Obviously, Milwaukee's off to a great start. I think Boston will figure it out. Philly's still off to a pretty good start, even though they've had some bumps in the road. But how does this Butler trade to Philly, in your opinion, change the way you would rank the Eastern Conference?
I said in the beginning of the season, I still think going into this year, before the game started, I still believe that Philadelphia was the third best team behind Boston, then Toronto. Toronto has obviously shocked a bunch of us with the way they came out, but they had DeRozan, who was a great player. They also added a player that may be a notch above DeRozan, so you couldn't see them go down, but the way they could go was up. You know, so they added that. Then you got Boston, who has that young core group, along with them great, savvy veterans there. You know, I knew they was going to do good, so I had the 76ers pegged as the third-best team in the East. But I didn't expect Milwaukee to play like they're playing. So even with Jimmy Butler, I think this team surpasses for Milwaukee as the third-best team in the East. I do not think, and I know I'm supposed to be a homer, guys, but I don't play that way. I don't think they surpass Toronto or Boston and move up to first or second in the East. But with that being said, I don't think they can go any higher now unless they do some other things to fill out their roster. You know, the Sixers gave up a combined 64 minutes a game with Robert Covington and Dario Saric. That's a lot of extra minutes. And I know Jimmy Butler's will be a tough guy, but I don't know if he can play 64 minutes when there's only 48 minutes in a game. I mean, so, you know, these minutes got to be allocated somehow, and I'm a big fan of Wilson Chandler. But as a former player, you guys know, as former professional athletes, hamstrings are one of the most irritating, most depressing injuries you can have. So I'm hoping that Wilson Chandler can get back to 100%, because if he is back to 100% sooner than later, expect him pegged in at that 3 spot along with Jimmy, JJ, and Ben Simmons, and expect him to be a little bit better than expected.
Always great catching up with you. Enjoy the rest of the season. Thank you, Mark.
Appreciate it, guys. Have a good one.
You too. There he is, longtime NBAer Mark Jackson. Still has Boston and Toronto ahead of the Sixers in terms of his power rankings, even with the acquisition of Jimmy Butler. But if Butler settles down and settles in and plays the way he's capable of playing,
he may bridge that gap, you think?
Yeah. Well, listen, they got a big three, right? Embiid, Simmons, and Butler. That's a legit big three. And it sounds like Butler's more than likely going to sign long term. Now, I don't think Kawhi was necessarily looking towards Philly, but there were some rumors that he might, because he's got some familiar faces there.
Yep.
And he's a guy who I think he wants to go to the West Coast, but if he was going to stay in the East, Philly might have been in on that. Obviously, if they sign Butler, that's out. So Kawhi is not going to Philly.
Yeah.
So take that for whatever it's worth if you're a Raptor fan.
I thought it was a lock that Kawhi's just going to the West Coast. Well, that's the thing. Like,
I hear you.
It's all hearsay. That's why. Like, let Kawhi play here and play very well.
Yeah. I think a lot of the NBA kind of insiders are sniffing around. I don't know if they're just doing it as kind of throwing a bone to Toronto, but they're like, Toronto is now in the mix. Like, he likes it, blah, blah, blah. Well, believe it when I see it, but people are tossing that one around.
Hey, 12-1 start. It's not like anything's gone wrong yet.
Right.
You know, the weather is what the weather is. It's always going to be this way.
Is the weather similar?
I can't even think about what word I was looking for.
Similarities.
I think similarities, but yeah, I don't know what I was.
You threw out similar twice in 30 seconds. You got to get that for us.
I
let
thought
me know
my,
when you have it.
My head was going to completely
familiar,
spin off.
Familiarity.
I don't know.
Similar.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. It was a butcher job. Not worthy of the Hall of Fame.
The look on O's face.
Well, he doesn't usually butcher words.
No.
Yeah,
it was a familiar situation.
Yeah, not Hall of Fame worthy.
That's all
anyway,
good, though.
Wayne Gretzky was on Leafs Lunch earlier today, and he had some advice for William Nylander. We'll play that at 5. We'll get into it. Rays coming up. Joe Bowen around the table later this afternoon. We'll have some Hall of Famers in the house as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. John tweeting in saying, I'm listening to Overdrive online, and it's funny that Bobby Mack, the Hall of Famer, has a vocabulary that is quite vast, including words such as surreptitious that Bobby Mack will drop on a regular basis. And
really?
Hayes is adding to his own Hall of Fame vocabulary the word similar. That's my word now.
Is it like sommelier, but similar?
Didn't
like Matt Caws, I think, is a sommelier.
He actually is a sommelier.
But Malls, do you have similar for us or no? Let's
because he's got
this.
Some similar.
What a loser! This guy's a primetime host. Give it to me one more time, please.
Because he's got some familiar faces there. Yeah. Here's the problem.
The thing is, you said it, and then you tried to get your brain together, and then you fired out similar again.
I know.
You doubled down on it. That's what it was.
That's the amateur move, okay? Everyone, we're doing 3 hours a day, 15 hours a week. You're going to butcher a word.
For sure.
But I need to be more professional to know. Pick a different one. Pick a different door. You're
Dude,
not getting it. And I went back to it.
I one-upped you, and you can probably find this online somewhere. I was the World Junior game last year, outdoor, Canada, USA.
Yeah.
Me, Ray, and Tessa did a segment on the ice. I had to run up the stairs. I sat down. I was sweating. I was melting. And they were like, how was the ice? And what I wanted to say was there was ripples on the ice and how the puck, I had to, like.
So it was choppy.
So I wanted to say how the puck, how it was going to be affected going side to side. And I had effect in my mind and puck. And I said,
I remember that.
Yes. And then I was like, effect.
Yeah.
But and I that was said, live.
Can I say it? Because it's not even a word.
No, you can't say it. You can't say it.
But is it, were you live?
Oh, yeah. National television.
I was watching it live. And I remember thinking.
We've all been there.
We've been there before.
Listen, it happens. It's live TV. You live with it and you apologize after if you have to, but I mean,
Malzy, we gotta just, we gotta do it one more time. Give us similar,
because he's got some familiar faces there.
Dude, that was a butcher.
No, yeah, that's bad.
The verbiage though, didn't Vern drop something ridiculous on us?
Yeah, he did. He had a word that has never been used on the show before.
We all looked at each other when it came across, and I don't like. I Googled it immediately, and it was like the longest word. But
that's why he's Vern Lundquist.
Exactly.
And we're not.
That's why he wheels.
Yes, he does. He mows lawns. Overdrive has a pair of tickets for the Leafs taking on the Bruins November 26th. Every day this week, we will provide the clue to the identity of a current or ex-Maple Leaf player. On Friday, you have the chance to call in and name that Leaf. Today's clue, this Maple Leaf defenseman has played for six NHL organizations. This Maple Leaf defenseman has played for six NHL organizations.
I already know who it is.
I don't.
Yep.
Who do you think it is? It's day one. I guarantee you, you're not going
to
know.
It's Brandon Leipzig.
He's a defenseman.
Oh, that's not
Leipzig's
him.
A left-handed winger, so get, it's not him.
Get familiar with the program.
Can I hear that again? I love Brian. Come on. Mahles, one more time, and I won't ask again.
Because he's got familiar faces there.
Yeah.
You can just hear the panic in my voice, too. I know I can't find the word.
You were like, what's his face? Numbnuts there, the kid that was like dynamite. Down goes
the dynamite.
Yes.
That guy's name was Brian, too.
Really?
Yeah.
We got to get Mahles, put them both together to hear which one's worse.
Yeah.
A little bit of
dynamite.
The boom goes the dynamite and familiar, and we'll see which one. We'll have a poll.
Have you actually ever watched that whole broadcast with
kid? I have.
It's an accident.
It is unreal.
The most cringeworthy.
I feel bad for his family that had to watch that live.
Yeah, but
because you're like, I love
fault.
This guy.
That was amateur hour
well,
by the people who put him up there.
It's somebody's fault. He has to take some sort of responsibility.
I lied. One more similar right into commercial.
Because he's got some familiar faces there.
Yeah.